The Mark Stein Club Q&A, live around the planet, begins in 30 seconds.
Hey, this is Mark Stein. This Saturday, we have the Olympics, we have the Tour de France, we have baseball, and Frank Sinatra serves as our radio sports reporter. Do we have any music? Beats me. You'll have to tune in to find out on The Town Saturday at 5 on Serenade Radio.
The Stein Online Clubland Q&A begins right now. And now, here's Mark.
Hey, welcome along. July 24th, 2024. It is 3 p.m. in the Oval Office, from where Joe Biden will address the American people in 5 hours' time. 4 p.m. in the beautiful Canadian Maritimes, 4:30 p.m. in fabulous Newfoundland, and beyond the Americas, 8 p.m. in Gillingham, Kent, where a British Army officer has been brutally stabbed outside his home. 9 p.m. in Paris, where on the eve of the Olympics, Parisians are forbidden to access the River Seine without a government permit, which will only be handed out if you have legitimate employment down on the river. 10 p.m. in Kiev. I was doing so well. 10 p.m. in Kiev, where Zelensky says Trump would be hard work, but that he, Zelensky, is a hard worker. 10:30 p.m. in Tehran, where nobody seems to be taking seriously the Yanks' claim of an active Iranian plot to kill Trump. Midnight 45 in Kathmandu for all you Iranians and Newfoundlanders who moved to Nepal to check out the quarter-hour time zone. 3 a.m. in Singapore and Honkers. 5 a.m. in Sydney and Melbourne. 7 a.m. in Auckland. And a rather more convivial hour for the kippers and kedgeree in His Majesty's dominions across the Pacific. 40 years ago today, July 24th, 1984, this law should not have survived 40 years. 40 years ago today, the United States Congress passed the National Minimum Drinking Age Act, mandating a national minimum age of 21 for the purchase and possession of alcohol. It was great news for bars in Quebec along the Vermont and New Hampshire border, as I know in my particular neck of the woods. 21 if you want to buy or be found in the possession of alcohol. Of course, if you want to slice your breasts off and render yourself infertile, the minimum age is, what's it down to now, 12, 7? Oh, what's the minimum age for swinging by the meth lab? Yeah, what's the minimum age for that? We have sort of semi-breaking news. A video has been released by pro-Palestinian activists showing how they breached the security at the Watergate Hotel, where the Israeli Prime Minister, Mr. Netanyahu, is staying. The Watergate Hotel has confirmed that these guys got in and that they released maggots in the Prime Minister's conference room. You can see the maggots crawling all over the table if you get a kick of seeing maggots at the Watergate Hotel. I was taken to lunch there a few years ago, so I won't be going back anyway. I'll just say that. The owner, I don't think he's the owner anymore, but David Bradley invited me to lunch there and then thought I'd like, because I'm a simple New Hampshire type, I'd just like to have a corned beef on rye in the diner there. Anyway, there's maggots. I don't know whether there's maggots in the diner, but there's maggots all over Netanyahu's conference room. They succeeded in setting off the fire alarms inside to try and disrupt his sleep. By the way, do you know he's a visiting head of government? So do you know who provides the Prime Minister's protection in the United States? Yes, that's right. The Secret Service. They were too busy wiping the tapes of the radio communications from Butler, Pennsylvania, to actually take care of his security at the Watergate Hotel. And I apologize to our friend who sent in a question last week, a former Secret Service agent, but, you know, all these agencies, they're the most powerful agencies on Earth, these guys, and something has happened to them. And so it's like Sean Hannity getting sentimental about some G-man he met in 1958 or whenever it was. That's not how it is now. 7 days till the end of the month. Who knows who'll be shot or stricken by the COVID in this last week, because these are fast-moving times. So fast-moving, you can already hear the old memory hole. The memory hole, that's Orwell, 1984. If you haven't heard my serialization in 1984, do, because it's all happening, literally. The things he wrote about, including the memory holing, it's all going on before our eyes. And better than that, it's the memory hole is now being cranked up to ludicrous speed. The New York Times man reports that the dead would-be assassin did internet searches for Trump, but he also did internet searches for Biden and for the royal family. So we're getting a picture here of just a loner misfit with a broad, kind of very general interest in famous people. Uh-huh. Whatever. Is he the kid of that Mandalay Bay shooter that the Mandalay Bay guy gave up for adoption? Is that who he is? The indefatigable Julie Kelly, who's been right about everything to do with January the 6th. I interviewed her on Fox way back when, just shortly after January the 6th. I think it was one of my final hosting gigs there. And I remember there being some pushback from senior management having her on. But anyway, Julie Kelly's been pretty much right about January the 6th since January the 6th. Today, she proposed a question to be asked of FBI Director Christopher Wray during his appearance before the Judiciary Committee. Quote, were any FBI assets, agents, investigators, undercover employees, or confidential human sources, informants, in communication with Thomas Crooks before and or on July the 13th. That's America 2024. That's where we are. Joe Biden, in his telephone call to commiserate with Trump for taking a bullet through his ear, asked him, what made you turn your head at the last minute? God almighty, was there a leak? Is there a mole? Which is a useful reminder that Trump, right now, July 24th, was supposed to be dead. And with last week's Republican convention plunged into chaos. Instead, he survived. And a disgusted press corps has galloped on to the coronation of Kamala. It's bollocks all the way down in a dying pseudo-republic. So Joe Biden is speaking from the Oval Office tonight. I assume that means he's got something else to say other than that he's withdrawing as Democrat nominee, because that would be a mere party matter, which you're not supposed to dress in the trappings of state by doing it from the Oval Office. So presumably he'll be doing something else. Is he going to announce he's resigning the presidency? Or is that just what they want us to think? Like I said, bollocks all the way down. And however things go on election night, don't expect this to end in November. This is a permanent state of affairs now. Okay, let's get to your questions. Peter B. says, greetings, Mark. I assume you've seen on the X wires, that's the Twitter, the announcement from Peter Brimelow that he will be suspending VDare.com operations in the face of the costly lawfare from Letitia James of this beautiful but hopelessly corrupt state. That would be the Empire State of New York. It may be a legal manoeuvre, but between this and the Mann case, the state of free speech is not looking good in the colonies, regardless of election outcome. I welcome your thoughts. Yeah, this is, if you don't know VDare.com, it's a website about immigration issues, which is the biggest issue facing the United States and the rest of the West, because on the present trajectory, there isn't going to be a Western world in 20 years' time. The United States will be one giant, hellish, crime-ridden, violent, blood-soaked Latin American favela, and Western Europe will be some third-rate Islamic Stan, and likewise Canada, and Australia might stand a sporting chance, but I'm not even confident about that so much these days. So immigration is the existential question for you and I. We're talking numbers here. And if you just go on the numbers that have been admitted to the United States by Biden in the last 3.5 years, you're witnessing unprecedented demographic transformation. And again, not before you constitution waivers start jumping up and down. I think constitutions generally are designed for relatively small numbers of people. So the idea of having a constitutional republic of limited government when you have a population of 500 million, I actually think that's stupid. but anyway, Peter Brimelow, who has been running VDare.com, and he's not just opposed to the Illegal Immigration Act, he's opposed to the, whatever it was, the 1965 Immigration Act, because he thought it demographically transformed the country. And he's quite right. Every state is ultimately going to be California, tiny states. You have these stupid governors in states like North Dakota saying, oh, yeah, we'd like to go like California now. So all these people coming across the Rio Grande, why don't you send them up here? And you can be sentimental about this, which is how most people are, because of that stupid, well, the statue isn't stupid, but the poem stapled to the foot of the statue is stupid. As I said in that monk debate in Toronto, the French handed the Americans a pretty great Statue of Liberty, and the Americans nailed the stupid poem to it and turned it into a statue of immigration. So Peter Brimelow's website is not sentimental. It runs the hard, cruel realities. And actually, you're sick if you're still sentimental about immigration when you have had the number of gang rapes, for example, by illegal aliens that have been going on since Joe Biden opened the borders. Unfortunately, when Peter Brimelow set up VDare in the late 90s, it was a much saner time in America, and lawfare was not really a thing. So he incorporated it. At that time, he was living in Connecticut, and he set up his business in New York because it was the nearest big city to where he lived. And that seemed like a reasonable thing to do, which it would be if you were in kind of any other country. But unfortunately, New York is, as Peter B. says, beautiful but hopelessly corrupt. So Letitia James, The same Attorney General who's targeted Trump and was threatening to send the bailiffs into Trump Tower has also been targeting VDare.com. But with this critical difference, VDare hasn't been charged with anything. She's just required them to... There's them been charged with a thing. This is how evil. And this is where the wankers... I get very annoyed. The legal scholars prancing around, talking about America as if it's a land of law. It's a land beyond law. And Peter Brimelow hasn't enjoyed the protection of the law. He hasn't been charged with anything. VDare hasn't been charged with anything. But instead, they've just been harassed with subpoenas requiring to provide tens, hundreds of thousands of documents. Do you know what it's like? Because I do, in this evil, evil regime. Do you know what it's like to have litigation without end? It's like, you know, I sort of come out of my slumbers or in the early hours of the morning, start having a dream. Sometimes I'm dreaming about Ursula Andress emerging from the surf in Dr. No, and sometimes I'm dreaming about the Dover sole at in a Meunier sauce that I like to get when I'm in Montreal. And then some little idea will come into my head for some little spectacularly brilliant idea. And I think, oh, that's great. I'll wake up in an hour or two and I'll get onto that. And you wake up in an hour or two and the first thing you do is look at the emails that have come in since you switched off the night before relating to your ongoing litigation. And that takes up all the day, and then you don't have time, as I've spoken about before. I think about the books I'll never write when you're in this litigation without end. It has destroyed VDare. They're shutting down, and Peter is quitting the institution that he built up over 25 years. I don't know him. I met him once. We had lunch in Montreal with my friend John O'Sullivan and Bob Tyrrell from the American Spectator. So it was basically four hacks having lunch in Montreal, and I don't really remember much about it, except there was a very funny story relating to one of those curious fellows who likes to put rodents into his intimate passages. That's all I remember about that lunch. He's not a friend of mine. I'm just a reader of the website. Now I won't be able to read the website because Letitia James has closed it, has put him out of business. Now, there's people say, why did you incorporate or register or whatever you do in New York? Well, I'll tell you what, because if you think that this is a normal country, I've spoken about this before. I employed a lady. She worked half the time for Rush and half the time for me. And then she came to work for me full time. She lived in New York. I've never known the regulatory burden I had to labor under for that. And then I got this notice from the New York State Bureau of Compliance telling me I was in non-compliance with the Bureau of Compliance, and the fine for that was a nice round figure of $10,000. And so as much as I adore that young lady, she was a big part of what we do here at Stein Online. But after that, I said on Rush, I said, I have no idea why anybody does anything in the state of New York. I would hire someone from the jungles of New Guinea before I ever hire another New York resident again because of that. It's just an awful state to do business in. But we've gotten worse now because this is the evil thing about it. It was just harassing and burdensome and cumbersome. Now it's all those things, but it's also wholly politicized. So whether you enjoy benefit of law depends on who you are. There's all kinds of people who, you know, if you're Black Lives Matter, feel free to smash up Fifth Avenue. No one in the state of New York is going to do anything to you. But on the other hand, if you've never committed any crime, like Peter Brimelow, the state of New York will put you out of business because they don't like your politics. And what's interesting to me is I put in a word for VDARE when this stuff first started happening to them, when I was on with Tucker on Fox. Now, I don't think... I don't think that would happen these days, because the interesting thing is that for whatever reason, Fox News and National Review and the Wall Street Journal and various others have concluded that it's not in their interest to take up the cause of Peter Brimelow. We have a lot of commentary in our comment section. Veronica from New Zealand's always, it's about, oh, it's not you. Stein is such, he's so Squaresville because he's talking about first principles all the time. And now we're just down to basic friend-enemy distinction. And that's fine. It works fine for the left. They chastise their enemies brutally and they never let up. But on the other side, the right doesn't have the friend-enemy distinction. They have the friend-enemy and then the enemies of our enemies who kind of ought to be our friends, but they're not quite our kind of people. So nobody ever goes to bat for them. So Letitia James has just taken out the number one source for big picture coverage of the immigration issue, which, as I said, is the existential threat, not only to America, but to the entire Western world, which will cease to exist because there won't be any Western world the way all this stuff is headed. It's a numbers game. The idea that, you know, you let in the millions and millions of people that Joe Biden has let in, and they're all scampering across the Rio Grande. They're all loading up the skiff in the Rio Grande to get across the river, because they're all interested in having a way better constitution than they left in Paraguay or Colombia or wherever you want to talk about. It's like completely, it's absurd that, and it's not the reality of where we live. Dave Willoughby says, "Dear Mark, I read last weekend that the Secretary of State estimated that Iran is just a week or two away from having enough nuclear material to make a bomb." So that was last weekend, was it, Dave? So now they're just 3 days or a week and a half away from having enough nuclear material to make a bomb? That's an oddly precise prediction, as Dave notes. How would he know? Did he receive a notification from the Iranian bomb update app that he downloaded from Google Play? And if it's true, why would the secretary want the world to know that he knows? What do you think is the motive behind the estimate? Yeah, it's odd, isn't it? It's a bit like all that. Do you remember the way it was in the 2 months before the Ukraine war, where they were all talking all the time about how Putin was about to launch his invasion of Ukraine? Oh, he's about to do it now. He's going to do it. He's probably going to do it on Friday. Oh, it didn't happen on Friday. He's gone to his dacha. That probably means it's been postponed till Monday. Yeah. It's a bit like the as soon as some mysterious 20-year-old goofball puts a bullet through Trump's ear, we hear about this Iranian plot to take out Trump. I don't think they seem to have abandoned that one, because the goofball turns out he wasn't in communication with some big shot Ayatollah parked outside. I think Iran has had enough nuclear material to make a bomb for some time, simply because it's a much, you know, you only have to think of how the friends they've got around the world. They've got, certainly, you know, Pakistan is a nuclear power, and there's people in Pakistan who'd be quite happy to let the Iranians in on it, and likewise the North Koreans and all the rest of it. I don't know, you know, it's interesting to me. They're going to need another distraction. And so whether that is another war, maybe the Ukraine war just doesn't do it for them anymore, and they're going to need another war. And maybe, you know, monkeypox never took off, so they're going to need virus X. But there will be something along between now and November. Christopher Marchant writes, a first-time contributor from Alderton in Suffolk, England, says, now that Biden has stumbled to a stop and parachuted in the vice president, who is barely coherent, do you think the fix is in to steal the election? Christopher is so naive. It's rather sweet, Christopher. He's so naive because he lives in a country where the elections are generally on the up and up. Yeah, I know, you know, this is the most, the election they just had in the UK produced the most distorted House of Commons that has ever been known, because the first past the post system can lead to some anomalies whereby a party is not... A party that just confines itself to operating within a narrow sphere there. So if you have like the Scottish and Irish parties that just operate in Scotland or Northern Ireland, you know, like Sinn Féin get 1% of the votes and have 1% of the seats or whatever it is. But then you get people like Nigel Farage who try to compete across the whole UK, and the first past the post system can deliver some very distorted distorted results. But under the rules of the system, it's a fair election. The thing you have to remember, Christopher, about America is that the things that go on in American elections, like the votes not being counted where they're cast, you know, this thing, oh, it's, yeah, we're ending the count at 10 o'clock because we're all a bit tired and we're going to go home. And in the night, there'll be vans arriving with more votes. But, well, wait a minute. If those votes were cast at polling stations, why aren't they being counted where they were cast? That's what Jimmy Carter demands when he's in Africa monitoring an African election. So all that stuff is designed to enable people to steal the election. It's not very difficult, this. You know, we're going to have huge amounts of mail-in votes, and this is before Virus X. And the reason that, as I've often said, the reason that you have an election day and the polling station opens at 7 in the morning and closes at 7 at night is because it's very hard to steal an election in 12 hours. If you have weeks of voting beforehand and weeks of counting afterwards, it's incredibly easy to steal elections. So American elections are designed to enable certain parties or a certain party to steal them, because that's what they want to do. So the only question that matters is, the question in 2020 was, are the Democrats prepared to let Donald J. Trump serve a second term? And the answer to that, fairly obviously, was no. Now the question is, 4 years later, are they willing to let him serve a second term? In other words, are the people who have given us this rather implausible dynasty-style July of hairpin bend plot twists, is that happening because they're prepared to entertain the concept of a free and fair election? I think not. I think not. And the question is, you want something, you know, the minute you have Kamala Harris, who would be whatever, America's first female president, America's first black female president, supposedly, America's first so-called Asian American president, America's first Montreal schoolgirl president. The Westmount High is going to be insufferable. if they pull this off. And as I said the other day, the first Canadian president since Chester Arthur. If you're ever in Bedford, Quebec, they got a big sign. I think it's Bedford, might be the next village over. They've got a big sign up there in French saying, proud to be the birthplace of US President Chester Arthur. So the question, then you have one of those elections where there's a right answer, a correct answer. Are you going to let the old white guy win, or are you going to get let the first Jamaican, Indian, British subject? It's always British subjects, isn't it? It's interesting with all these BIPOC, whatever they're called, term you're meant to use these days. It's interesting. You have to be a British subject. If you're a person of colour, you have to be a British subject, like Barack Obama or Kamala, to win the presidency. Weird, strange. If I was actually an African-American, so-called, I'd be getting pretty sick of that. But apparently they'll put up with it forever. So I think that's the only question that matters. Are the people who've just done what they've done in the last few days, do they strike you as the kind of people who are willing to allow a free and fair election to be held? I don't think so. I think the answer to that is pretty obvious. Look at this. It's 31 minutes past the hour. How about that? 31 minutes past the hour. So let's pause a moment from the passing sheriff. Oh, no, we don't do that anymore, do we? We've moved all the music on this show over to Serenade Radio Saturdays at 5 p.m. London time in order to free up more time here to talk about politics, as if we're entertaining the pretense of so many American talk shows that this is a normal country that engages in normal politics, as opposed to a country that in a little over a week has had an assassination and the enforced removal of the sitting president. Oh, look here. The first Trump-Harris polls are out. NPR, PBS, Trump up 1. Reuters, Ipsos, Harris up 2. Quinnipiac, Trump up 2. It's bollocks all the way down. But in order to pretend to take it seriously, we've thrown all the music out of the show. We are live around the planet. It's 28 to 4 North American Eastern Time. That's 28 to 9 British Summer Time. A little behind, a lot ahead, according to where you chance to be on this turbulent earth. Let us get back to your questions. April, one of my favourite ladies' names, April. I love the name April. Rush used to have a favorite ladies names thing where depending on who it was who called up, they would be in the top 10 or not. Hi Mark, maybe I need to take a break from reading Gibbon's Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire because my mind took a very dark turn this morning. Those in charge expected to have Trump shut up, jailed or dead by now. Suddenly Joe is out and Kamala, who is as popular as Ebola, is in. I wonder if, quote unquote, they think Kamala will make a much better intersectional martyr than a candidate. They've already established that the nation is divided by hate and the Secret Service can't keep anyone safe. She may be nothing more than an ambitious, useful idiot. Should I just go sit quietly now? Well, I don't like to think that. You like to think that they're at least on the side of people who are on their side, these people. But they weren't shy about doing whatever it is they did to Biden. You know, the interesting thing is most countries that still have rules about COVID now say you no longer need to quarantine if you have COVID. So the fact that Biden hasn't been seen since he came down with COVID, supposedly. And I don't actually buy that. I think that is extremely odd when you look at the COVID rates. As I said, oddly enough, the United States, which spends more on the bollocks than anybody else, doesn't actually have any COVID numbers. But the COVID numbers In Canada, official numbers are like 8 per million, and in Mexico, they're 3 per million, and in Puerto Rico, they're 0 per million. So I strongly doubt whether Biden ever had the COVID. But even if he did have the COVID, the idea that he's quarantined and he can only be seen by people who want to bludgeon him into putting his name to some tweet giving up his re-election campaign is deeply weird. Then you have the rest of what's going on. You know, I think if there's some video out of whatever it was, Secret Service agents on a roof or whatever, talking. And people are very, at that level, you know, people are inured to a lot of blood. There is no other, if you just take the Occam's razor view, the idea that these guys have this fella on, he did some internet search wanting to know how far away Oswald was from Kennedy, this guy. The FBI director revealed that today. The fact is, he should have... the fact is, the obvious explanation for why they allowed him to do what he did and eventually climb up to the roof and get ready to shoot Trump, the obvious reason is likely to be the reason. And that that in itself tells you how much they're prepared to do and what they're prepared to do. I think all this stuff only, you know, when you talk about setting someone up, like Kamala or, you know, whoever, I think these people, Biden, we still don't know who's been running the government of the United States for the last 3.5 years. And the only thing we know is that it wasn't Joe Biden. It self-evidently wasn't Joe Biden. He can't run anything. And people say, oh, well, it's Obama. It's Obama's third term. That's just parochial drivel, in my opinion. It's way bigger than that. Whatever's going on, you know, oh, this is where showbiz gets in the way. Because if you make a film or you make a play, you don't get George Clooney unless he's going to be the star and get all the time in the picture and get all the dialogue. You don't have a thing where it turns out that some guy who only appears for 2 minutes and has one line of dialogue is the villain. But that's the way to bet in real... I know there are exceptions to that rule, like Hitchcock killing off Janet Leigh, you know, halfway through Psycho. I should have said plot spoiler before that. I know there are exceptions like that, but generally that you don't, because it'd be, you don't sign George Clooney and then only give him a minute on screen and two lines of dialogue. But so we think that's how it works in real life. Oh, Obama's the one I've heard of, so he must be behind this. No. What is happening in America is so weird. It's someone you've never heard of who's behind it, you know. And it's disturbing what's going on. It's very disturbing because they've just, for whatever reason, they've just forced the incumbent against his wishes not to run for a second term. And... the guy he was running against, they just put a bullet through his ear So then this is, that's why there's no point pretending, oh, it's politics as usual, all the rest of it. But it's not, this is bigger, oh, it must be Obama behind it. No, Obama's a weird character and you don't want to go paddle boating with him. But the idea that it's not just the guy you've heard of. In the end, it's not show business. Charles McCarthy says, Mark, I'm wondering if the Pelosi-Obama cartel isn't just having us on with the razzle-dazzle of the Kamala Harris candidacy. They know she's going to lose too, but maybe not as bad a drag on the down ballot. Are they just getting Joe Biden out of the way so they can focus on the tight congressional races, like the Senate seats they have to defend in Nevada, Montana, and Ohio? I guess the ease or difficulty of selecting a Harris VP may give us a clue. No, I don't think so. I don't think, if you're saying, oh, they've given up on the presidency and they don't do that. They're not like that. Yeah, they want to win the House seats and the Senate seats and the governorships, but they're not giving up on the top of the ticket. And if you just look at the way the media has been playing Kamala since Joe Biden's intern tweeted out the intern's endorsement of Kamala on Sunday, then you'll know that the coverage of the vice president has completely changed. And they're all and the whole messaging thing has changed. You know, age wasn't, oh, you were an ageist if you thought, yeah, sure, Joe Biden's getting on a bit and he may have lost a step, but yeah, the idea of this terrible ageism, it's utterly deplorable. Yeah, I never said, I never thought it was, I mentioned Dr. Mahathir Mohamad, the Prime Minister of Malaysia, former Prime Minister, a couple of days ago in connection with something or other. He returned to the prime ministership in his 90s, and, you know, there were people who didn't like him and wanted him out. But the fact that he was in his 90s, he was a fit and vigorous nonagenarian, as Her Late Majesty Queen Elizabeth was. So it's not the, but now they say, oh yeah, the age thing. Yeah, we think on reflection, we think you're right about that, the age thing. So who's the old, now Biden's gone, who's the next oldest? Oh, Trump, yeah, he's too old. You know, this isn't even subtle. This isn't even subtle. But they're doing it because it's Kamala is the future. And the old white guy is the past. You know, they're lining it up and it's all, and they're all on message. Norman Fenton. Always like to hear from Norman. I saw Norman in London during my visit to the Royal Courts of Justice in the Strand. And his and the rather agreeable cocktail party we held for friends and supporters afterwards, courtesy of Chris Davis. Very thankful to him. It was a very enjoyable event. Norman Fenton says, Mark, don't you think the Democrats are desperate for Biden to be able to struggle through until the election? Because otherwise Kamala will already have been president, and so they won't be able to say that women have a duty to vote for her in order to ensure the US gets its first female president. Also, it's interesting, isn't it, that the people who say this are the very same people who can't even define what a woman is? Yeah, I'm so over all this. I would really much rather have the first trans president. I think we should be on to that by now. I don't think that is. I think she's an easier sell if she's the incumbent. You don't want her to be the incumbent for long because she's a rather grating personality. The better you know her, the less you like her, which is why, whatever it is, 42 of her 47 staffers quit. It would still be greatly to their advantage to have Kamala running as the incumbent. And what that would mean, on the assumption that he doesn't throw in the towel tonight, is that sometime after the conference, the Democrat convention, little after Labor Day, when people start paying attention. So in September sometime, Kamala gets installed as president. So she's basically president for 7 weeks or something before the election. And you can't then say, okay, your thing sounds as if it ought to make sense. You know, people won't have a duty to vote for her then because she'll already be the first female president. But it'll be worse than that. You can't say the first female presidency, the first South Asian presidency, the first Montreal schoolgirl presidency, the first Canadian presidency since Chester Arthur. You can't say it's been a failure and kick her out. She takes over on September the 17th, and you kick her out on the first Tuesday in November or whatever it is. That's not going to fly. So no, I think there's no downside and a lot of upside. Chris Davis, the aforementioned Chris Davis, who threw that delightful party when I was in London at the High Court. And it was a somewhat trying day, but the party was certainly very agreeable. Chris Davis says, Mark, I hope you're relatively well. What are the odds of the 25th Amendment being called upon in the coming weeks? If it is, do you think this confers any advantage to Harris, or indeed the opposite, using the a week is a long time in politics analogy? Well, I don't know how they're going to get him out. They threatened him, I'm told, with the 25th Amendment on Saturday, which is why he folded. Because the vice president actually is one of the people who has to invoke the 25th Amendment. It's a relatively small number of people who are in a position to invoke it, and I'm not sure that would look great. I think they have to come up with a deal. I don't think they have to go the 25th Amendment route, unless he actually just does, you know, it's pretty obvious, I think, that him on speakerphone at the Kamala thing, that was a pre-tape. And that's why there wasn't a lot of back and forth between them. Unless he truly has some incident, which means they have to invoke the 25th Amendment. But I don't think they'd be going that way. Bill Bradshaw says, Kamala Harris appears to be all handlers, no candidate. Do you sense a Trump? Not a Trump. Do you sense a Trump? Do you sense a trend? Yeah, I don't think these people are running anything. I don't think the head of the executive branch commands the executive branch. I don't think Joe Biden did. Trump wanted to, but the executive branch was taking whoever you want to name in the executive branch. Doesn't matter whether it's Thoroughly Modern Millie at the chiefs of staff. Doesn't matter whether it's the FBI. They're all doing their own thing, or not their own thing, but they're acting on the orders of some other person or persons. They're defying the so-called chief executive of the executive branch. And I certainly don't, you know, Joe Biden has been a front man, as I said earlier, a front man for whom we don't know. And it'll be the same with Kamala. Frank Gallenstein, or Gallenstein, says, Hi, Mark. I'm reminded that the past several weeks of Rush's comments about the press. That is, that if they are the ones that made you, they can destroy you. They've done so with Biden and are on the same path of making Harris. Conversely, Rush said many times, if you are self-made, they cannot destroy you, providing you stick to your guns, like he did so often. I believe Trump fits this scenario. He is self-made, has stuck to his guns, and the press has not been able to destroy him. Yeah, that's true. We had that fellow who was, what was he running for? Was he running for Senate, the Ten Commandments guy? In whatever, wherever it was. And I remember saying at the time that the question was whether you could have Trumpism without Trump, because it was an attractive platform. You know, mainly the build the wall and the anti-immigration thing. But you have to be big enough to withstand what they're going to throw at you. Because I think it's interesting, actually, poor old Lou Dobbs died a few days ago. Lou was actually one of the first mainstream media figures back when he was on CNN who decided to make immigration his issue. And of course, what they did then was they denormalized him, they marginalized him. They made him out to be a bigot and a kook and all the rest of it because he'd picked the wrong issue. Likewise, Peter Brimelow, a very mainstream financial journalist, he took up the immigration issue. And, I mean, it's very sad if you watch his video announcing the closure of VDEB, but it's like broken him. I recognize that because, as I said, after my time in the District of Columbia Superior Court, the difference between America and anywhere else, you know, my friend Lawrence Fox loses cases hither and yon in the London courts, and it's a few £1,000 here and a few £1,000 there. But if you, Peter is ruined. Now, Trump, you know, Trump could be close to being ruined. I mean, he's being fined $500 million and all the rest of it. But the fact is, he's big. The reason he worked in 2016 is because he's big enough for the crap that they throw at you to bounce off. That's what they didn't get. You know, they thought, oh, he was disrespectful to John McCain. He's finished. Nah, nobody cared. Nobody cared. The media can't, if you're in Rush terms, if you're self-made like Trump, the media can't, you know, he survived the grab and buy the whatnot tape, which, you know, you can't see Marco Rubio or John Kasich surviving that, can you? So the fact is, and this is, again, the trade-off that people don't understand. It's the right. It's the combination of the issues, but you have to have a gut. But because the issues are toxic, as immigration has proven for Lou Dobbs and Peter Brimelow, even though they're overwhelmingly popular in the country, they're not popular with the people who make the running, the people who matter. So if you take up those issues, you know, Mexico's not sending its best. You have to be Trump-sized to be able to just get that out into mainstream public discourse. And the question here is with the J.D. Vance thing. I find interesting that because they're obviously going to try and destroy him. And he's someone who isn't really known except for this best-selling book he wrote. The question then is whether he's J.D. Vance is going around as if he's Trump size. So he's saying stuff. The stuff he said about the UK being a Muslim nuclear power with the seat on the Security Council. That's a very funny line. I can understand why his UK audience was a bit stunned that he said it. But he's like thinking, I can throw back the stuff they throw at me. And we're about to see whether that's true. Steve from Manhattan says, Mark, about 90 years ago, one of my favorite authors wrote that it does not do to leave a live dragon out of your calculations if you live near him. Acting New York State Supreme Court Justice Juan Merchan is currently alive and well and living in New York. Donald Trump is scheduled to be brought before this judicial dragon in Manhattan on September 18th for purposes of being sentenced for 34 felony convictions. Justice Merchan has the power not only to sentence Donald Trump to prison, but to shuffle him off to jail immediately without granting bail. My question, can Team Trump leave the Democrats' favorite live judge out of their calculations? No. The way to bet if America was sane is that on July the 13th, Trump took a bullet for his country. That's a group that relatively few presidents belong to. It hasn't happened since President Reagan over 40 years ago. And the ones before that are not altogether encouraging examples. He's a president who's taken a bullet for his country. So you would think that if Merchan wanted to climb down off of this, he would actually say, he said, well, you know, politics ain't beanbag, in that stupid expression. Politics ain't beanbag, and it certainly hasn't been beanbag for Mr. Trump here. So I think I don't think I'm going to be sending him to jail. But they're not like that, are they? They're not like that, are they? Because the people who are making the running on this are the same kind of people who knew about the shooter at Butler, Pennsylvania, but still let Trump take to the stage. Still let Trump take to the stage. And I think that is still the way to bet on a lot of on the way this is going to go. Aaron Everett, I don't want to be overly gloomy about that, but I look at the reaction, you know, a third of Democrats in some poll apparently wish that the shooter had actually succeeded in killing his target. So, you know, how many of these judges he's up before would feel the same way about that? Aaron Everett says, it's a long-standing frustration that conservatives give a pass to the good guys in government. They do this for the FBI, CIA, Secret Service, and the military, but all of those entities of government have the same rotten core of what makes government so nefarious: power and control. We're given some kind of sense that we can control it all through our voting to change it if we don't like it. But that's equally as phony a premise as Joe Biden's AI voice from the Kamala call. Likeable or not, even an honest look at the hurdles in front of the Kennedy campaign would expose that voting is equally as scam-laden as the aforementioned alphabet agencies. Why do we as conservatives think that spending the efforts we do at playing their game will accomplish anything we're interested in seeing? There aren't good guys and bad guys in government. There's just bad government and the people of a nation, and those two things are as diametrically opposed as they have ever been. Besides genuine deconstruction of everything, is there a place to focus energy on changing the trajectory? Well, you're right. I've never been one of them. I was mocking Sean Hannity a few minutes ago. Oh, yes, there's a few bad apples in the... He was saying this for years. And when Tucker and I talked about it at 10 to 9 one night on the air, a little before Sean came on, we were, you know, I said this isn't true. It's a thoroughly, the FBI in particular is a thoroughly, Sean's still doing this. Oh, yes, there's a few bad apples there, but the average straight shooting G-man, salt of the earth, you know, and it's rubbish. It's not like that at all. And how many times do they screwed over the January 6th guys? Now they screw over Trump. It turns out that there's not, you know, they're running this investigation. They're hosing down the crime scene. He can't tell you. He says they found 8 cartridges on the roof. That's all he said today, the director of the FBI. Well, Maybe there were, you know, more cartridges on the roof or different cartridges if you hadn't hosed down the roof, because it's a sloped roof. So the minute you start hosing it down, things that are on the roof will slide down the slope and wind up somewhere else, probably in the big dump truck that's just backed up to the edge of the roof. You know, it's a corrupt institution. And when you talk about these other ones, the military, now they've been doubly corrupted because at the same time, they're woke. So you have a woke general staff. You know, people, all this thank you for your service stuff, which I don't like to do. I've been creeped out about that really since it became clear that America wasn't serious about prosecuting the war on terror. So we're going back, you know, whatever it is now, 15, 20 years. And it just wants to send people off to Helmand province to die in some thankless war it's not serious about prosecuting. Thank you for your service. Oh, look, I really respect the military. I've put a yellow ribbon on my car. That's one of the things that has ensured there's no price to be paid for failure. I mean, the idea that anyone would hire someone from the Joint Chiefs of Staff in their civilian life is absolutely incredible to me. What for? What's America won? So this veneration, and I'm not saying anything. I choose my words carefully, you know. And you know all the phrases, lions led by donkeys and all the rest of it. I'm not talking about, the poor bloody infantry. I'm talking about the people who are responsible for prosecuting the wars of America's military. Now you have people like, it's just ridiculous. Now it's ridiculous that it's not just enough to lose wars in a butch way. They're now losing wars in a stupid, woke, transgender way. I mean, and again, the right are always behind. It's what's so frustrating. It's just so frustrating. Oh, thank you for your service, and we so venerate, and they're the salt of the earth. These straight-shooting G-men, they're the Eagle Scouts, so you know. You know. It's not. It's a big, once a bureaucracy. This thing about small government is an important point. The minute you have big government, there are not enough people. Then you just get a big government types who want to be in big government. You can't. There's too many people. No incoming conservative president knows enough small government people to fill every job in the executive branch. So as long as the government is the size it is in the United States, it's going to be of the type it is. Charles Pert says, Mark, I'll never match your command of language, so I'll go for brevity. Are you sure? This looks like quite a long thing. I saw a clip of you at a hearing, I think a congressional hearing on climate, where you physically put yourself between a scientist and a loudmouth. That move earned my respect, and President Trump's iconic photo after his ear was shot was in the same vein, visceral, raw, and real. Although your body is not what it once was, your courage still shines, on par with Cory Comparatore and Todd Beamers. That's not true, Charles. The bit about my body not being what it once was is certainly true. I think you're referring to an incident at the Senate where the Democrats had let in all these Greenpeace activists to harass the witnesses, to intimidate the witnesses. And Will Happer, I think, is the chap you're thinking of, who's a very distinguished professor, but he's getting up there in years. And so he's got this Greenpeace guy, the Democrats let the Greenpeace activists into the room early to threaten the witnesses. They're comfortable with violence. It's exactly the comparisons you make aren't really true, but it is the same as what happened in Butler to this extent, that they admitted people they knew were going to be a threat to others in the room. And one of my lawyers interceded. And, you know, these are serious things. In the end, I mean, I can't stand this. I'm in a weekend feebled wreck now, but you'd still be obliged to step in. You don't have any choice. Basically, you can't have Netanyahu, I believe, the first line of his speech today was he had no time for this clash of civilizations thing. He said, no, it's not a clash of civilizations. It's a clash between civilization and barbarism. And that's actually true in that Senate hearing too. The Greenpeace guys just wanted to use thuggery on the witnesses. So unless you want to live, and again, this is actually the, do you want to live in a world made by these guys where you can't say anything, where it is just naked thuggery? I don't think anyone does. Your children will not thank you for indulging these people. You know, it just goes on and on. Ken writes from Maryland. Did I say that right? I think I said that like the way they said on the BBC. My uncle lived there for quite a while. Says Mark first, yeah, Maryland. That's how they say. Donald Trump narrowly missed being killed today at a campaign rally in Maryland. Ken says, Mark, first, thanks for fighting the good fight on so many fronts. Second, I'm reminded every day how much I miss Rush and you filling in for Rush. I do too. I miss listening to Rush. I've spoken before about those days when he wasn't feeling so great, so he had to have me there on standby in the studio. So I've got, you know, my headphones in. I'm following along in case he just conks out and I have to take over at the last minute. He was so good. He was so good. And he always put it in big picture terms and first principle terms. And I miss him for that. Ken says, it's sad to see how so many are so credulous when it comes to the Democrats. Specifically, they believe Kamala is it. A month ago, they believed old Joe was it. As a fisherman, I am afraid they are setting the hook too quickly on Kamala. If she flounders, the D's will just replace too. Yeah, you should let her be the one that got away. Trump and his supporters need to be careful. The goal is not to win this week or next, but to win in November or September, whenever people are actually voting. We all know the R's can screw up anything, including this. I still fear that they really do not believe in getting out the vote and protecting the vote. Instead, they will blow money on TV ads on Fox News, preaching to the choir and lining consultants' pockets. What do you think? Well, I think the one thing Trump demonstrated in 2016 that I'm all on board with is you don't need the consultant industrial complex. You do need to ensure that you have election integrity, and I don't believe that the United States currently has that. So that if someone is minded to steal the election, then they will steal the election. Now, you're talking here about rank-and-file Democrats. People in the end, you know, there are certain sort of, there's people who don't want to vote for Trump because they think he's vulgar. And that would be fine. That's fine if you don't mind losing your country. Because if you think Trump is vulgar, wait until the MS-13 gangs are all rampaging through your little community. So the fundamental unseriousness of half the electorate is the issue here. You know, they thought Joe... The thing about it is that it actually, if you watch the approved news sources, you would have no idea. You have to seek out Joe Biden wandering off at the G7 summit, because they don't actually show it on the CBS Evening News. They don't actually mention it on NPR. And so if you create the conditions in which people are able to live in a bubble, then they will choose who they think of are the nice, fluffy people. Oh, come on. Wouldn't it be nice? I think, you know, I've been waiting all my life to be able to vote for a Montreal schoolgirl. You know, it's just, I've been to, I was vacationing in Vermont, and I was getting a bit bored by the lousy restaurants. So I thought, oh, I'd drive to Montreal, and I had like a sophisticated, it was almost like being in Nice or Cannes. And so to discover that Kamala is a Montreal schoolgirl, that just makes me want to vote for her all the more. You know... That's really not a good way to bet the future of your country. It really isn't. It's not going to work out for you if you keep thinking like that. And it's a numbers game here, too. Just to bring it back to Peter Brimelow. You know, it's okay letting in one Montreal schoolgirl. It's okay having this thing. Well, you know, every so often we let in a British subject so they can be the Democrat nominee that season, like Obama and now Kamala. And I think it's really nice to show there's no hard feelings after the revolution, that we keep electing. Every so often we make one of these British subjects the president. That's all very well, but it's a numbers game. So you can have one Montreal schoolgirl, but when you let millions and millions and millions of people across the border, your country dies. Diversity is where nations go to die. That's one. There's no precedent for this. There's no precedent for just extinguishing your nation and the very particular factors that have enabled it to prosper. There's no just on a delusion. So you can vote for your delusions because they sound nicer than the vulgar orange guy with the mean tweets. But it'll cost you your country. It'll cost you your kids' future. So keep doing it and see how that works out. This has been... What's the... What's Cobbler's line? Unburdened by what has been. I'm about to be unburdened by what has been, but it has been. Mark Stein's Clubland Q&A across the planet, and I'm the has-been in charge. You want music? Tough. We've moved all that to Saturdays on Serenade Radio, 5 p.m. London time. That is 6 p.m. in Western Europe, or 12 noon North American Eastern. I hope you'll join me this weekend, because I get criticism that I don't talk sports at Stein Online. Mainly because I don't have any interest in American football or whatever. Rush did, and Rush loved it, and I always hated the way then, whenever it was a big deal like the Super Bowl or whatever, he'd always be flying off with all the big shots. And so I'd always be having to do the Monday show and having to say something about the Super Bowl. Anyway, I don't talk a lot about sports, but the Olympics are up and coming. And we have some other sporty-themed items on the show this Saturday. Serenade Radio, 5 p.m. UK, 6 p.m. Western Europe, 12 noon North American Eastern. But that'll do it for today. Stick with Stein Online for our regular Thursday date with Laura's Links. Laura Rosen-Cohen rounds up the internet as only she can. And don't forget, in a few hours' time, our continuing tale for our time, Bulldog Drummond. I'll be narrating the latest episode at approximately, I think it's 7 o'clock Eastern, which is midnight in the British Isles. If you're still toying with the pros and cons of joining the Mark Stein Club, come on in, the water's fine. And don't forget, for the Stein Shy Chum in your life, there's a Mark Stein Club gift membership with his or her name on it. That is going to do it for today. Stay safe, stay free, stay well away from Rehoboth Beach. That has the highest rate of COVID infection on Earth. No joke.
Mark Stein's Clubland Q&A is a production of Mark Stein Enterprises and Oak Hill Media. Rights reserved.